May that I sent?
Yes, yes, thank you.
Well, I was the first technical editor of the journal, and I worked at it for 2 years, and I thought that was enough. I had other things that took quite a bit of my time, and actually, on the publication committee, we had talked over matter of a technical editor and thought that ought to be changed about every 2 years. So after 2 years, I was glad to turn it over to Norm. And he just kept it forever and anon. Actually, before we start, I'd like to ask a couple of questions, if I may.
Okay, I've got this on just so I don't miss anything, but what we will do is transcribe this. I'll send you a copy and...
Yeah, the first question was, will the tape be edited?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In other words, selected material will be taken.
Well, there are two aspects to it. One is that I will put together a relatively verbatim transcript, which I will edit before you see it. And then I will send a copy to you. You have control over what's there. And who can see it, what else happens to it. It's your property, as it were. Now, we're doing this for the Electrochemical Society, but nevertheless, and I have a release form here which indicates that. There'll be another one later on which you can control what happens to this material.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the Electrochemical Society, per se, will do with all of this material. And I know this is being done in preparation for their 100th anniversary, which is still a few years away. We will, I suppose, turn this over to them.
Mm-hmm.
But before that happens, you will see it, you will have control over it.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, you've already answered what would have been my second question. And I'm on the a sort of a consultant to the anniversary, 100th anniversary activity. And one of the things that they propose to do is to offer the oral histories to anyone who may wish to listen. 2 hours or so, I presume the tapes will run about that, is a long time for anybody to listen. And I was wondering whether there would be some possibility of editing these tapes for that specific purpose, to be done either by you folks or by the Electrochemical Society or some combination.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't, that's not a problem at all.
Yeah.
For that particular purpose, yes.
Because I was going to object strenuously to offering the entire tapes to anybody who wanted to listen. Not because there would be anything deleterious to the society that would be edited out beforehand, but simply it might give a wrong impression if somebody had to listen for 2 hours to find something of more general interest than would pertain to people interested in, say, electrochemistry or even just interested in people.
What we have found, I've done well over 100, almost 150 interviews over the last 10 years for the Chemical Heritage Foundation. And so we have an extensive collection of tapes. And no one has ever come in and listened to the tapes. But they do come in and look at our bound reading copies, which are indexed. So I had somebody who wanted something on Linus Pauling. Well, Linus Pauling's covered... There are anecdotal stories about Pauling in 6 different interviews. You could go to the index, pull out that little piece, and that was it. That's all they had to do. You're right. Going to the tape to find it is very difficult. So our experience has been most people will look at a transcript, and you can cover 2 hours of oral and a written transcript in a very short time.
Just to be on the personal side, I think that if somebody were to listen to something about me, I would want it to be my participation in starting the monograph series for the Society. because I think it's the most important thing that I have done for the society. So that would be perhaps 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay.
And that's the sort of thing which I hope that might be made available to people.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, in order to get a good assortment of folks doing this sort of thing, or being responsible for this kind of tape, there ought to be quite a few of them. This means short ones.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I don't know what their full plans are yet, and I think they're still developing. But
oh, they're very fluid at this stage.
I, as I said, I was down here anyway, so I said, well, I can come over and see you,
mm-hmm.
as I saw Norman Hackerman in Texas, because I was already there. And then the next person I'm going to see is, as you probably know, is Charles Tobias.
Oh, yes.
And he was on our list to be scheduled anyways. He was to be done this year separately from ECS. So when that came along, we said, well, we're going to see him anyway, so we can talk to him as well.
You'll enjoy that.
That's what I've been told.
Yes. Charles is one of my favorite people.
Everybody has spoken very highly of him.
Yes.
And Paul Milner is, of course, on our board,
mm-hmm.
representing your society, and he and I have had some very lengthy discussions. And, of course, his name came up many times.
Well, Paul and I get together very frequently at meetings. We enjoy each other.
Yes, I've enjoyed my interactions with Paul. Is there anything else you wanted in the way of preliminary questions?
If so, I've forgotten.
Okay.
Which is I'm very, very capable of doing these days. Okay, go ahead.
Well, let's begin then by indicating today is March 22nd, 1995, and this is Jim Boning speaking with Harold J. Reed at his home in Grove City, Florida. Dr. Reed, I know that you were born in Dubuque, Iowa, and 14th of February, 1911. Could you just tell me a little bit about your parents and your family background?
Well, I can tell you fairly precisely about my paternal background because it's Irish. And my paternal grandfather and grandmother emigrated from Ireland as youngsters, separately in different families. And were married in this country in 1857, which goes back quite a ways.
Yes.
And so I have Irish background on the paternal side. On the maternal side, as far as I know, my ancestors there welcomed the Indians when they came to North America.
Mm.
In other words, I have no idea of when the family came to America. The family name on my mother's side was Taylor, which indicates, of course, English background. And other than that, I know relatively little, in fact, almost nothing, about my family background. I've not been much interested in genealogy. What I've learned has largely been through the efforts of cousins,
mm-hmm.
rather than my own parents. My father was a carpenter, and my mother had a very, very interesting occupation for a woman. She was a compositor for the Galena Gazette, a newspaper, but probably the only one they ever had as a woman. And she was there some 10 years or so before she married my father. So, but
you said Galena.
She had only a high school education, which in those days, which would be the early 1900s, high school was considered pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did I say high school education?
Mm-hmm.
I was wrong. Eighth grade.
Eighth grade, okay.
Yeah. At that time, the eighth grade education was about equivalent to our present high school education, because they spent most of their time learning.
Mm-hmm.
rather than playing instruments in the band or whatnot. Well, actually, my folks left Dubuque when I was 6 months old, so I'm not much of an Iowan. And we moved to Galena, which is up in the northwestern corner of Illinois, very high, hilly area, and an old mining area for blackjack, which is lead zinc ore. And after that, we just moved around and around. How much of this sort of thing do you want?
Well, I'd like to go through a little bit of your childhood and where your interest in chemistry developed.
Okay. All right. My father suffered financial reverses in the early 20s. He extended too much credit to farmers and got caught in the panic of 21. This changed things quite a lot for me, because I had gone to a country school where I was the only student in my grade. When my father entered his bankruptcy, we had to leave the town where we were then living and move to Galena, which was the county seat of Judge Davis County. The whole new world opened up to me there, because there was a library in the little community where we had lived previously, which was named Woodbine. There was just nothing at all. So the Carnegie Library in Galena was not only a revelation, but a grand one. And I began more and more to enjoy school. We left Galena when I had finished seventh grade and moved to Crystal Lake, Illinois, northwestern suburb of Chicago. And this was a wholly different community, about the same size as Galena, perhaps a little smaller, but it was a summer resort town in those days. And at the time I was ready to enter high school, the community had built a new community high school to take care of not only Crystal Lake, but Fox River Grove and Cary, two small towns to the south. The tax situation in Crystal Lake was a little odd. Most of the residents were summer residents, but had very considerable properties, some of them quite elegant, on which they paid taxes, of course. As a result, the community had a plethora of tax money. And when the community high school was built, they did it up brown. It was a beautiful piece of work. But most importantly, they engaged a gentleman named Dean as superintendent. And he had what I consider one of the most wonderful ideas for a school superintendent, namely, that all of the instructors should have their degrees in the material that they were going to teach, and to hell with education courses. Well, take care of the law. It required a certain amount of formal education courses. But Mr. Dean insisted that what was important was the subject matter. We had marvelous instructors, just wonderful. Well, my interest in electrochemistry started, not surprisingly, in the course in chemistry that I had in this high school, whose laboratory was better equipped than the freshman laboratories at the University of Illinois. We had excellent equipment, and everybody had all they wanted. Well, we are also encouraged to do a thesis. This was in 1923 and 1928. And Colin Fink's patent on chromium plating had just issued. So I decided for my project I would see whether or not this patent worked. And I was able to get a copy of the patent. And lo and behold, I ran some experiments, plated some material, and it worked. So I wrote a letter to Dr. Fink telling him of my experience. Never had a reply. He was able to get along on his own. But
how did you find this? How did you come across this patent as something you were interested in?
My instructor,
I see,
suggested that I might be interested in it. Just why he did it, I don't know. But incidentally, he's still alive. He's well along in his 90s and on his fourth wife. Remarkable man. Well, in any event, that was my original interest in electrochemistry. If we could go. Incidentally, I graduated as valedictorian of my class, which was not a very big one, and that gave me a scholarship to the University of Illinois, which is my main reason for going to Illinois rather than to a nearby college in the Chicago area. At that time, of course, there was no division of the University of Illinois.
Well, you must have started right after the college, right after the Depression started. When did you go to Illinois, 1930?
It was before the Depression.
Oh.
I was entered as a freshman in fall of 28.
Okay.
So I got caught in the Depression.
Okay.
And that was the reason for me interrupting my education. Because my father was still recovering from his financial problems. And although I could stay at home, free board and room, he couldn't offer me anything else. So I had earned money one way or another, and did 1 year at the university and ran out of money. Also, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. I had enrolled in chemical engineering. So I had a variety of jobs and went back to school for 2 years. I still wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. I changed to chemistry because I early became convinced that I didn't want to be an engineer. And so I dropped out again. And this time I got into something quite interesting. After some more or less miscellaneous jobs, as the legislative season of 1933 came on, a friend of our family was responsible for legislative reporting section of Commerce Clearinghouse. Commerce Clearinghouse is the publishing part of the Corporation Trust Company. And Mr. Hewling, who was the head of that section, needed a great deal of additional assistance when the legislators started meeting. At that time, almost all the legislators met in alternate years, and almost all of them in the odd years. So when 1933 came along, he needed a great deal of additional help. So I was hired for that. In those days, the legislators lasted no longer than their salary, which was usually as short as possible, namely about 2 months. So when the legislators finished their work, our jobs were over, except mine. For some reason or other, the president of Commerce Clearinghouse decided to try an experiment. The state and local tax service in those days had 13 editors, all of whom were lawyers. He decided that he would like to try somebody who wasn't a lawyer as an editor for that service. And apparently my editorial work for the Legislative Reporting Service had gone pretty well. So I was invited to become an editor in state and local tax service. Well, since I needed money, needed a job, I accepted. And, well, things went pretty well. And I earned enough money then, sure, going back to school to finish my first degree. And I decided chemistry was still it. Incidentally, I was offered a job with the Commerce Clearinghouse of editing their house magazine, which would have been a stepping stone to management. It was quite a temptation to continue, but I decided that science had more attractions than the law. In fact, some aspects of the law repelled me pretty badly. Well, I went back to Illinois, and of course, now that I had a fair amount of money saved, I found there was no trouble in getting a job. But I can go back a little bit. Am I being too wordy?
No, it's fine.
To go back a little bit, when I was a freshman at college, I took my meals at a boarding club, which was quite the thing to do in those days. And one of the group was a senior who was working on his thesis in chemistry with Frank Howard and Sherlock Swan. Frank Howard was a non-entity, pleasant chap, but a non-entity. Sherlock Swan, of course, had a great deal to do with the Electrochemical Society, very well known in electroorganic chemistry. Well, the chap that I'm referring to, the senior, I can't remember his name, but he broke his wrist. And part of his activity was metallographic activity, which involves polishing specimens, which are held by hand. He was right-handed, and his broken wrist was right-handed. He was desperate on what to do. Well, I'd had such a good background in high school, and college was never much of a problem to me. So I offered to see if I could polish his specimens for him, which I did, and became very much interested in what he was doing, which was electroorganic reduction, and also very much interested in his reaction to Sherlock Swan. So when it came time for me some years later to choose a thesis subject for my bachelor's degree, and in those days Illinois required a thesis for a BA, I went around to Dr. Swan, he was Dr. Swan to me then, to see if he had something that would suit me and whether I could suit him. Well, we came to an agreement, and I did my senior thesis with him to such an interesting result that I did my master's thesis with him too. So this is how I got into electroorganic chemistry. Of course, I rather soon got out of it because after the master's degree at Illinois, I could have stayed there. with an assistantship, but I wanted to go someplace else. And Sherlock was very much in agreement. I remember him saying that he would dearly love to have me stay on and continue sort of interest in things we were doing, but in all good conscience, he could only advise me to see if I could find something of interest elsewhere, just to broaden my background, broaden my experience. Happily, I was able to get an assistant instructorship at Penn.
Why Penn? Was that Edgar Foss Smith legacy in electrochemistry there yet? He died in 28, I think.
No, it was Hiram Lukens.
Okay.
Hiram Lukens was very active in the Electrochemical Society, and Sherlock Swan had already gotten quite active, although he was still a relatively young man. And Sherlock felt that I could get along well with Hiram Lukens, and that the atmosphere there would be good for me. Well, it turned out differently, because Edgar Foss Smith retired, and Hiram took over as head of the chemistry department and was too busy in his new activity to take on graduate students. As a result, I did my thesis with Martin Kilpatrick, and on a subject which was really more metallurgy than chemistry: behavior of passage of gases through metallic membranes. That's how I got more and more into metallurgy. When I finished up my PhD at Penn, I again decided that I had to go someplace else. Although I could have stayed at Penn, in fact, I was already an instructor rather than an assistant. I was offered a good job there. But Hiram told me that much as he would like to, he couldn't promise fast promotion, simply because of the way things worked at Penn. You just had to take your chances. The chances didn't look too good. So that's why I went to Mellon Institute.
Okay.
That's sort of a halfway measure between industry and academic.
Had you thought about industrial jobs at that point?
Not seriously, no.
Okay.
Except at Mellon Institute, it was really an industrial job. It was the fellowship that I worked with. And you know how Mellon works.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's very different than Battelle. Well, the fellowship that I was with was H.H. Robertson, and they're builders or makers of heavy builders materials. But they were wanting to diversify because the building material industry
mm-hmm.
up and down. Well, so my assignment there was simply to get interested in something different than what we're making now and see what you can do. Very interesting. That's why I accepted the job. So I had a very pleasant 5 years technically. But I ran into problems with the patent attorney. We just didn't see eye to eye. And I felt that I was being badly used and neglected. So I was eager to leave when the opportunity came to go to Penn State. Incidentally, I had a very, very pleasant 5 years in Pittsburgh. I enjoyed it very much. And part of it came from the place where we lived. We lived right on the edge of the Carnegie Tech campus. And my neighbors, a chemist, a metallurgist, playwright, two mathematicians. That's this sort of thing. Very pleasant community.